Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.
Now, Dr. Afif El-Kafash, who is a consultant and paediatrician at the Rotunda Hospital in Dublin, is with us for this afternoon's Ask the GP. Good afternoon. How are you?
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, not at all. It's 087 1400 106 is the number. We've loads of questions coming in, first of all. But I know, Dr. Afif, you just wanted to kind of start today by, I suppose, maybe talking a little bit about some of the myths around kind of regimented baby routines. Is that?
Yeah, I mean, We are now, unfortunately, a society that expects babies to be regimented into a routine very quickly after birth. And there's a lot of pressure on parents to, you know, adhere to those 3 hourly routines, for example. One big thing is that a baby should feed 3 hours. And if they begin to show signs of readiness to feed maybe prior to that, that you should, you know, give them a soother or distract them until the 3 hour period because they will sleep better. That's one big thing I get in my clinic a lot when parents are concerned. And you know, my message is, you know, go with your instincts. If you feel that your baby is looking for a feed before the 3 hour mark, absolutely do it. Babies don't have a routine. Their feeding patterns can be quite erratic. Their stomachs are quite small, especially in the early newborn period. In fact, we tell parents that, you know, at birth, the baby's stomach is the size of a small grape. So they can't really hold enough milk to last them and sustain them for a 3 hour period. So a baby, regardless of whether they are breastfeeding or formula feeding, for example, over the first 24, 48 hours, will feed very frequently because their tummy fills up quick and empties quick. And waiting for 3 hours can sometimes be not great.
Yeah, so just the textbooks might tell you one thing and social media and, you know, websites, but just follow your own gut, really, is it?
Yeah, but unfortunately, yeah, some healthcare providers also give that advice of the 3 hour, you know, regimented feeding routine, which is something that is counterproductive, I think.
Okay. Now, listener's question from Sarah. She's got in touch. Our son is 8.5 months old. We've tried to introduce solids since 6 months. He loves the smooth puree that's fruit-based, but that's it. Whenever we try anything lumpier food with savoury food, he throws up quite a lot. I suppose we're concerned it's taken so long and he still won't accept food with very soft lumps or anything that's quite savoury. Is it okay or should we be concerned?
That is a very common concern, believe it or not. A lot of people think that babies should be well established on solids within a couple of months of introducing them. And it really varies from baby to baby. We often recommend that they do start with purees. And the key thing here is to be as diverse as possible with your foods. So not just focus on maybe the more sweet fruits, for example, you know, give them more savory and less sweet variety of fruits and vegetables. And you need to introduce a new food item to a baby for up to 15, sometimes 20 times before they accept it. The key here is not to worry and stress about it and to keep introducing and offering the food. You know, over the first 3 months, once the baby's 6 months old, they're not going to get their full nutrition from the solids. They're still going to get a lot of their nutrition from milk. You need to ensure that you have iron-rich sources to make sure that they do have, you know, iron in their diet. But I wouldn't worry too much. It does take time.
Are there certain savoury foods you'd suggest, Dr. Afif, to start with?
I would suggest with a lot of, with just a lot of variety. You know, things like carrots, sweet potatoes, pureed, you know, apples, pears. Babies like those because they are sugary. We actually have an innate desire for sugary food, and that's there from birth, believe it or not.
Okay.
So introducing more variety of less sweet fruits is and vegetables is also important.
Okay.
But don't worry, it will come.
Another listener is wondering, in my son's class in school, there's a child who has had measles since the weekend. The school says the child was vaccinated. What's the risk in the class for the other kids catching it? My own son is vaccinated.
So that's a difficult question to answer without knowing the context of how many are vaccinated in the class. I mean, we all know that in order to get herd immunity, meaning that to limit the spread of measles, 95% of the population need to be vaccinated, and that will apply to the class as well. Now, the good thing is that we know that vaccinated children, even if they do get measles, will get a much milder form of the infection compared to a child that may have not had the vaccination. So I would just keep an eye out for the signs. You know, it usually starts like cold, flu-like symptoms, and then a rash that starts on the face and then spreads down to the body. Now, vaccinated children generally have a mild disease, but it's something to watch out for if the baby or if the child begins to go off foods and things like that.
I've just had a baby and the baby's not taking to the breast at all. I'm pumping all of the time, but I'm worried I'm not getting enough food into them. How can I tell?
So I really feel for that mother. You know, establishing a breastfeeding relationship can be extremely difficult, especially without the support. The first thing I would ask that mum is to ask for help. If she is still in the hospital, ask for help. Ask for a lactation consultant to come and see you. Why are you pumping? Is there an issue with the latch? Is there an issue maintaining a latch? Is there an issue with milk transfer? But to answer the question as to whether the baby is taking enough or not, if you are still in the hospital, we can weigh your baby. Most babies lose roughly between 7 to 8, 8.5% of their birth weight within the first week, and then they begin to regain it. If the baby's still on that trajectory, you can rest assured that they are getting enough milk. Also, babies pee once or twice day one and day two, and then they begin to pee more regularly after that. So ensuring that your baby is peeing regularly once the feeding is established is another sure sign. Weight gain is the most important thing once the baby regains their weight. We would expect babies to gain roughly 30 grams a day or an ounce a day once the weight gain begins to get established. So, you know, watching out for these things, but I would urge this mother to get lactation support.
Get some, ask for help. Another listener says, my six-month-old often gets very pink cheeks after feeding that can last about an hour. He doesn't seem to be in any pain, but I'm wondering, could he have an allergy? I don't know. Should I get it looked at?
So it's a very interesting question. And obviously, we need a bit more information, but on the surface, it doesn't seem like your baby has an allergy, because often when we are feeding, if the rash only occurs, or if the rosy cheeks only occur during the feed and not after, that could usually be to the increased blood flow that comes to the face when the baby is actually feeding, being excited with the feed. And then if it subsides after the feed, then it's unlikely to be an allergy. Again, in the absence of other rashes over the rest of the body, that's unlikely to be an allergy as well. Okay. I'm assuming this child hasn't started solids yet, so they're not really exposed to a lot of allergens just as yet.
087 1400 106 is the number if you have a question for Dr. Afif Al-Kafash today. Another listener says, my one-year-old developed a cough about 2 months ago. Now, it doesn't seem like a severe cough at all, but I am worried because it hasn't gone away. Any advice?
So it is not uncommon or unusual for a child to have a persistent cough after an initial upper respiratory tract infection or, you know, an initial kind of virus. The virus is cleared from the system very quickly, but what remains sometimes is the inflammation or the irritability in the airways that can prolong a cough for, you know, a month or two, sometimes a little bit longer. If your child is otherwise well and they're not wheezy and they don't have any symptoms, you can wait it out. But if you feel that the cough is persisting beyond this period, it's worth getting it checked.
We can't settle our 7-week-old baby. She's eating fine, but she's crying and crying. The sleeps for little bits of time, but not much. From what we can tell, she isn't in pain. She's not sick, but we are at our wit's end. Can't settle a 7-week-old.
I really feel for those parents. And again, that it probably goes down to our initial chat of the sort of expecting babies to self-soothe and settle on their own. Babies by nature love to be close to their parents. And you often find that, you know, babies need to be held for a prolonged period of time in order for them to settle. They need to be in close proximity to the mother. However, things like colic or reflux need to be investigated in this baby. So I really urge them to seek help and advice from a healthcare provider that is comfortable in dealing with those things. Colic usually starts in and around 6 weeks to 7 weeks, and the crying is usually concentrated in the evening time. Trying a probiotic, giving smaller volumes more often if you're formula feeding, may also help with this.
Okay. A lot of questions about sleep and sleep training a baby. People wondering, is it nonsense? Another texter saying, I'm wondering how I should put my baby down to sleep. Obviously on her back, but my own mum says I should keep moving what side of the head she sleeps on so she doesn't end up flat. Is that right?
So, you know, a flat head can develop if the baby's on their back for a prolonged period of time. It's called plagiocephaly is the medical term for it. However, it is not something that we would be too concerned about. You know, and adhering to safe sleep practices by having the baby sleep on their back is very important. You know, moving the head from side to side is not something that I would recommend for the parents to do. Absolutely, if they begin to see flattening on one side, you know, moving the head position while the baby's asleep can help.
Just finally, I'm pregnant, due in 10 weeks, but I'm so anxious and I feel like I just don't know enough about babies and what, you know, and I won't be able to do what I need to do. And I'm just wondering, is it a common feeling?
It is a common feeling. And, you know, you're embarking on a completely new chapter in your life. And the advice I would give you is to actually, you know, talk to people about your concerns. And if I may plug our podcast, the Baby Tribe podcast, it's a parenting podcast that myself and a colleague of mine, Katie Mugan, who is a pediatric and public health nurse, have. We literally go through everything a new parent needs to know in a non-judgmental size bite episodes,
okay,
where we digest everything a parent needs to know about, you know, having a newborn, literally from the antenatal journey all the way throughout childhood.
Yeah, good stuff. Listen, Dr. Afif, it's lovely to have you in studio with us. We'll definitely get you back because there's lots more questions coming in. I've no doubt many concerned parents out there today, but that is Dr. Afif El-Kafash, who's a consultant, neonatal and paediatrician at the Rotunda Hospital in Dublin. Thank you so much, Dr. Afif,
for
joining
me.
Us today.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.